is 4:55 on Wednesday, October 5th.
So, where is everybody? There was an excuse.
Wednesday, it's raining
at the bank.
You know, I just didn't want to get up this morning.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
We're the important ones that did well on the test.
Well, yeah. For the most part. Ryan or Derek? Ryan? No. Ryan Kim?
Yeah.
I thought that was you. I'm still learning. I mean, I hope that exam didn't scare away half the class. It wasn't that bad. Okay. This is weird. This is even worse than 3:55 was this morning. That's saying something. So we're going to talk about TCP's version of congestion control. Now we talked, remember before, about the talked before about the sort of general principles of congestion control and so on and so forth, but we haven't talked about TCP's version. So the mantra, if you will, of TCP congestion control is this thing called additive increase, multiplicative decrease, which basically says that you go faster and faster slowly, and when you see congestion, you go slower really fast. Quickly. You go slower quickly. What you see, if you look at the congestion window size, which we're going to see is proportional to the sending rate, is that starting at some point, You go faster and faster. You get to a point where congestion occurs, and you quickly drop down to a lower rate, and then probe again. So remember, the idea is that we have to we can't know what the actual capacity of the path is between the sender and receiver. So we have to constantly probe it in order to use it as best, at the highest possible rate that we can, and that means, given TCP's design, that we will get to a point where we're going faster than it can go, and then we have to slow down. So that's the mantra. So the variable maintained in the TCP state is congestion window. It's called congestion window, and the idea is that every round trip time, we increase it by one, and then when we see congestion, we cut it by roughly in half, and that's the scheme of things here. So the first thing to see is the congestion window controls the rate, and that's not immediately obvious that the congestion window controls the rate in this way. Right? It's not ever obvious to me, even when I come back to it again after a year. So why is it that the rate is the congestion window divided by the round trip time? I need a picture to see it.
Is it because the congestion, if I remember correctly, congestion window is how many bytes? No, that's not it.
Bytes. Yeah, it is bytes in TCP. Unacknowledged. Unacknowledged bytes. Right.
Okay.
That's what. Well, remember, TCP's behavior is actually, it actually uses the minimum of the congested window and the receiver window. But we're going to assume that we're congestion limited here for this discussion rather than if we're receiver limited, congestion doesn't happen. So congestion is the interesting case now. So here's our sender and here's our receiver. And we have, now this is why it's useful to know that packets take up space on the wire, right? Because when we're going at the full speed, we've sort of filled up the wire with packets, and we have ACKs coming back, like so, and the number of bytes represented by the packets that haven't got there yet, plus the ones that are still being acknowledged, is equal to the congestion window. All right? So that's how many bytes are in sort of represented around this path, and the round trip time is how long they're going to take. So the rate we're going is the congestion window over the round trip time. Okay, that I think helps. That's how the congestion window controls the rate at which we go. And
what was being sent and the acknowledgments?
And their acknowledgments, because remember what congestion window says is the unacknowledged data that I sent. Right? So some of that data is still on its way to the receiver, and some of it is the acknowledgments. They're on their way back. Okay? So, and it's approximate because the RTT is varying and the congestion window is varying and so on and so forth. But that's the intuition behind the congestion window controlling the rate. Okay. So then the question is, how do we tell that congestion has occurred? Remember our discussion before about three duplicate ACKs and retransmissions and all that stuff. They're related, right? A timeout occurs waiting for an ACK. That means that either the packet didn't get there or you didn't get the ACK. So that's perhaps a sign of congestion. Or seeing three duplicate ACKs for a packet, again, means that a packet has probably been lost. And so it's actually a better indicator in some ways than a timeout, right? The timeout could apply to the ACK itself, but three duplicate ACKs means that it wasn't the ACK that was lost; it was really was the packet that was lost. So anyway, those both indicate loss. Loss is assumed to mean congestion, and so when you see one of these indicators, you reduce the congestion window, and that's the basic theory. Yes?
Is a timeout more devastating to your stream than three duplicate acts? Because I was trying to read the graph of the homework.
Uh-huh.
And the last one, instead of going to half of what the highest window was, it went all the way back down to zero.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the timeout is considered more serious.
Okay.
Because you should have gotten the three duplicate ACKs, and you didn't get three duplicate ACKs. So that means things are worse. Okay? That's why. If you didn't have the three duplicate ACKs mechanism, then probably the timeout wouldn't be considered so bad. But given that you have three duplicate ACKs. Okay, so our mantra is AIMD, additive increase, multiplicative decrease. When congestion, multiplicative decrease when congestion is perceived, additive increase when no congestion is perceived. There's a mechanism called slow start that has to do with how the thing gets itself off the ground originally. We'll talk about that. And conservative after timeout events. Yeah, that's the timeout is more devastating than three duplicate ACKs. Okay, so this thing called slow start. It's a bit of a misnomer because it notice what it says. It says we're going to increase the rate exponentially fast until the first loss occurs. And that sort of doesn't sound like it's very slow, right? It says we're going to double the congestion window every round trip time until we get lost. That's slow? Well, what's it slow in relation to? It's slow in relation to the way they did it before, which was the receiver said, here's my receive window, and the sender said, okay, here's everything. Fill it up. Right? So it was sort of a blast of the full amount of the receive window. And so compared to that, even though it's exponentially fast, it's slow. So that's why it's called slow start. Why do we need it? Well, we need it, first of all, in relation to the old way of doing things, because the old way of doing things was bound to produce lots of congestion as connections started. Why do we need to increase exponentially fast? Well, because the way you start out now is you start with one sort of maximum segment size, say 1,500 bytes, and if you have a round trip time of 200 milliseconds, that corresponds to, and it's not obvious to me at least, but we can figure it out, it corresponds to 20 kilobits per second. Well, that's awfully slow to go on most modern day links if we got stuck at that speed for any amount of time. So we want to quickly get up to something closer to the actual capacity of the link. So why is it 20 kilobits per second? It's not an easy ratio. The maximum segment size here is measured in bytes, so it's 200 milliseconds is 2,500 segments per second, and each segment is roughly 8 times that many bits, so that's 20 kilobits. Yeah. Okay. So here's how we do this. So, again, I get confused about this, so I'll try to show you how not to be confused about this. We want to double the congestion window every round trip time. That isn't every time we get an ACK. It's every round trip time. So how can we translate that into behavior for each ACK we receive? And the answer is that every time we get an ACK, we add one maximum segment size to the congestion window. And that leads to the behavior of doubling every round trip time. Why? Well, it's easy to see for the first one, right? You send one segment, you get one segment back, and we go from 1 to 2 in the congestion window. So now we send two segments, and we get, after a round trip time, we get back 2 ACKs. So we add 1 to each of those, and now we have 4, and it happened after 2 round trip times. And then we send 4 segments, and we get 1 back. So roughly every round trip time, we're doubling the size of the congestion window, which is doubling the rate at which we're sending. Okay? That's... But we're not doubling it for every ACK we receive. We're just adding 1 for every ACK we receive. Okay. So it builds up exponentially. Why don't they talk about additive increase? Well, because we're gonna keep doing that until we get an indicator of congestion, which is 3 duplicate ACKs or a timeout. So, and that should be sort of obvious. Multiplicative decrease says cut it in half. And then after that, we're going to grow by one MSS per round trip time. And after a timeout event, which is more serious, we sort of go back to the slow start regime instead. But now, unlike the original slow start regime, we have an estimate of how fast we can go. So we sort of adjust things so that we don't keep doing slow start until we get congestion anymore. We keep doing slow start until we hit a threshold, which I'll tell you how you compute, and then we additively increase from there.
If after we get a 3-duplicate ax,
mm-hmm.
and we decrease by half, and that decrease by half brings us below the threshold, would we increase exponentially until we hit that threshold?
No, because the threshold is equal to the half.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And as we talked about in relation to the question earlier, the timeout is more alarming because you should be getting duplicate acts, and you're not. So
would that be like a symbol of like a sudden connection or something like that?
When we're doing congestion control, we're going to assume that it indicates severe congestion.
Okay.
It may, in fact, correspond to complete loss of a path, in which case we'll find out that when we never get any more acts. But for congestion control purposes, we're just going to assume it's congestion. So this is then the typical graph that's put on exams asking you to identify the different regimes. Right? So we start out in exponential increase, doubling. These are round trip times, not individual acknowledgments, but round trip times. So we're doubling every round trip time. We hit a threshold, and the threshold, well, this is not a good picture. Originally, you know, when we start out, there's no threshold. We just keep going until we get congested. After we've seen the use the connection for a little while, we will get to this regime where we're doing slow start up to a threshold, and then we're doing additive increase for a while. Then we get congestion, which takes us back in one version of TCP down to 1, and in this later version it takes us down to half where we were.
Wait a second.
Depending on which kind of congestion it is. Yeah.
If it's a timeout,
it takes you all the way back to 1. In series 1, we go back down to 1. In the newer version of TCP, we go down to half.
For the threshold, like on this one, say the threshold was lower, like say the next.
If the threshold was here?
Say it's in between there. You can go actually over it before you drop, right? It doesn't have to land on the threshold.
Right. Is that true? Yeah, and I don't know. I actually don't know whether it errs conservatively or aggressively. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, suppose the threshold were 6, you would...
That would have a precondition.
I suppose what would happen is that you would jump to 6. You would limit the jump. Instead of doubling to 8, you would limit it to jumping to 6, and then go one by one from that point. If it were up to me, that's how I'd do it. Okay, so that's the so you see the idea is that when something really bad occurs, you back off a whole lot, and then you sort of probe aggressively up to half as fast as you were going before. And then you proceed from there. Whereas in the three duplicate acts version, you just go down to half and you probe slowly from that point. Okay, so that's the summary. Da-da-da-da. That's another summary of the rules. But you know, if you know what this picture means, you sort of don't have to have all those words to describe what's going on. All right. So the next question then is, given that this is the behavior of TCP congestion control, and assuming that congestion control is limiting how fast we can actually go, how fast, given a path of a certain capacity, how much of that capacity can we use with TCP? Right? So we have a path of certain capacity. We're going to probe that capacity. We're going to get to the point where we exceed that capacity, and then we're going to drop to half the capacity, right? So it's going to look like when things are operating normally, what are we going to be doing? We're going to be doing this. And so what's the average rate in that case? It's 3/4. Right. No, but that's good. I mean, you figured it out. I knew you figured it out. I knew you didn't read it, and that's good. You figured it out. It's 3/4 C. Is the average throughput that TCP achieves when all that's going on is that it's probing the link bandwidth and correcting for it. It gets more complicated if there's serious congestion that takes you back into slow start and stuff like that. But just in a normal sort of well operating network, this is what would be happening. That's a good theory. The problem is that over so-called long fat pipes, you discover that in order for it to operate that way, right, you've cut it in half, and you're sort of growing up to a large figure. So cutting it in half for a really fat pipe, one with high bandwidth, is going to take you down a long ways, and you're going to have, it's going to take you a long time to get back up to where your target is. And it turns out that, you know, it's something like a few billion packets that you need to get back up to that. That seems a little high, but anyway. So then you're assuming that that congestion is the only thing that causes packet loss, and that's kind of an unreasonable assumption when you have to have that many packets all successfully delivered to reach the capacity. So design work on new version of TCP is going on to deal with that situation. Okay. The other issue about congestion control that we need to talk about is, what if two people want to use the same link at the same time, right, in excess of its capacity? So what we would like is that if we have multiple users of a particular segment of a path, that they all can use it equally. That's the goal. And it turns out that TCP actually achieves that, surprisingly enough. And it has to do with this additive increase multiplicative decrease algorithm for a response to congestion. And there are actually theorems that say you have to do it that way. That is, you can't increase any faster than additively, and you can't decrease any slower than multiplicatively and have it be stable. And so additive increase, multiplicative decrease is the best you can do.
Well, now I'm just saying why it punishes people who cheat, because they hit the limit and then go down more,
right? Okay, so this is another one of these interesting diagrams. We'll save that for later. It's another interesting diagram that it takes a while to put your head around, but it's worth doing because I think it helps understand what's going on. So this is kind of a state space diagram, right? It every point in this on this diagram, each point corresponds to a different sending rate for the two senders, right? So the connection one sending rate is in this direction, the connection two sending rate is in that direction. So if I pick a point in here, this says connection one is sending much faster than connection two at this point. But they're both probing linearly. So what happens? As they're both probing linearly, their rates increase the same amount each time for both of them. So they travel this a path at 45 degrees when that happens. Things along this line represent the two senders going at the same speed, right? This is the x equal y line. And things along this line represent the two senders going at the total capacity of the link. Yes, Matt?
So is this supposed to be connection one? At first I thought it was two different hosts with the same connection, one being connection one and one being connection two.
It can be two different hosts. Well, let's look back at the picture. Like so. Right. The point is that both of them are going through the same congested location. So they have the same sort of congestion behavior.
But this would work for two different hosts or two different connections?
Two connections on one host, it would be the same, yeah. Okay, so what happens? Both of them are additively increasing, so they're sort of moving They're adding the same amount each round trip time until they get over the capacity. Then that's congestion, right? So they both see the congestion, and now they do a multiplicative decrease. And look what happens. For sender one, doing a half takes him back this much, this distance. But sender two, since he was going slower, is only decreased by this much. So the congestion affects sender one twice as much as it, well, more, anyway, than it does sender two. So the result is that after congestion now, sender two is going faster than he started out before, and sender one is going slower than he started out before.
So do they both hit congestion at the same time?
Approximately. Okay. You know, not really, but in the story anyway. This is the easy way to see it. But the point is that when somebody's going slower and sees congestion, he's going to slow down less than the guy who is going faster. So, okay, so we move back to here. We probe again. And again, you see that with sender one going faster, it affects him more than it affects sender two. And so we're moving up this line of total capacity toward the line of equal resources. Equal sending. This is the line of equal sending.
Oh, I was looking at it the wrong direction. I was really confused.
Right. This is the line where, so regardless of how fast they're going the same speed. Right? This is the line that limits how fast they could go. So this is the barrier, and they move up this line until they get to this neighborhood where they're going approximately the same speed. And, you know, it's possible to go over and have to come back and things like that, but they're going to sort of want to converge on going the same speed, and then they'll both be going up this line and back this, you know. Eventually you'll just be doing different things on that line. Yeah, it gets harder to visualize, but that's the idea. So anyway, that's it really comes from this additive increase multiplicative decrease behavior. If you don't have that, things don't work this way. Okay, what if there's UDP in the mix? Well, remember, UDP is nothing more than a little bit of additional packaging for IP, right? So it's just, there's no congestion control, there's no flow control, there's no reliability, all that stuff. Nevertheless, there are applications that better use UDP than TCP. Issue is that if you have a lot of UDP users, they're not playing according to these rules that stabilize a set of TCP connections at the same rates. And they can affect other TCP connections, right? They can steal bandwidth. By being aggressive with UDP, you could take a much larger fraction of the bandwidth. You may suffer a lot of packet loss as a consequence, but if you don't care about that, which some of these applications may not, you can sort of block out TCP connections. Well, so there's this research area of how to use UDP in a TCP-friendly way. That's one point about this. The other point about this is that, I mean, suppose you have a protocol like, I'm blanking. All right, you tell me. The protocol that's used for distributing videos and audios and... What am I thinking of?
BitTorrent.
That's the one. Yes. Suppose you have a protocol like BitTorrent. What?
Ubuntu. We don't want to pirate anything, of course. Just legal things.
Right. Yeah. BitTorrent is also used for legal things. Yes. And but you can't use it on campus. So because they're assuming you're using illegal things. So anyway, so BitTorrent, it's pretty impervious to packet loss, right? It's just it can go as fast as you want to go. They've got things in there to sort of protect the people who are being generous by serving things and so forth. But from the perspective of the internet service providers who are trying to provide good service to their customers who've paid them to do email and web browsing and stuff that uses TCP, BitTorrent is kind of nasty, right? Because it doesn't play by the rules, by the TCP rules. And that's why you get in, partly why you get into these fights about net neutrality and the like, is that one of the things that a ISP seems legitimately needing to do is limit bandwidth used by UDP stuff, right? But if they're doing that, once they sort of feel the need to do that, they sort of feel the additional permission to do it in ways that maybe are not necessarily fair to other people who are using that traffic. Like they might prefer that you use their voice over IP service instead of somebody else's. All right. So once you start putting into place the technical the mechanisms to deal with the technical problems that this causes, then you have also the mechanisms to do interesting and maybe less desirable business-oriented shaping and filtering and so forth. So that's partly why we get into these arguments and have these big political brouhahas over net neutrality, is because if you write the rules too simply, you can't deal with the technical problems. But if you don't have the rules at all, you let people sort of cheat, right? And that's where we are. I guess the FCC has published and adopted the final net neutrality rules now, which I've not looked at, but maybe we'll make that a project later in the class.
The founder of BitTorrent is releasing—he released like a beta protocol a couple of months ago that was a TCP-friendly application or a protocol, and hasn't really caught on. Because a lot of people use it,
right? But it takes a while to sort of overcome. But you know, that's the kind of I think is kind of a responsible reaction to the need for some sort of technical controls that don't also enable the business level cheating. And so I think later in the semester we'll probably want to look at those net neutrality rules a bit and see what we can learn about them, because I haven't had a chance to do that yet. And you know, if I have to research it, why not you do? That would be fun. Okay, the other thing, of course, that you can do with TCP is nothing stops you from having many TCP connections between one host and another host. And as far as these network congestion control rules are concerned, all of those are equal to all the other TCP connections that other people have going over that same path. And so by having multiple connections, you're potentially using more than your fair share in some sense. Web browsers do this. They have multiple TCP connections. We talked about that before. But they also typically limit them to a certain number, like 6. And That in itself is a problem. I think I mentioned with the click system in its earlier incarnation, I had the browser making multiple connections to the same server in order to get different pieces of the pages. It wasn't a bandwidth thing at all. They were just sitting there idle, but the browser wasn't willing to actually have those connections even open. So in the redesign of it, I got it down to just using one connection to do that. So anyway, those are the sorts of things that crop up. Alright, so moving on from here, we're going to talk about the network itself. We're going to talk about routing stuff inside the network, and the next project will be coming up shortly that has you implementing some routing algorithms after we talk about those. So I'm going to stop here for today, and Friday we'll start in on Chapter 4, and I'll try to remember to get the chapter assignment posted so that you can get started on working on that.